deepest, darkest crypts, to the backwoods swamp where we hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lodged deep inside your subconscious, it's time for a big, scary show.
Hello, this is Kelly Collins from the Scaratorium, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show. Ho, 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 ho.
Hi, my name is Kane Hodder from Friday the 13th and the Hatchet Films, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Ted White. You're listening to The Big Scary Show.
This is Ari Lehman, the first Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th. And you're listening to The Big Scary Show. Jason never dies.
Hello, this is Tom Morga, stuntman and one of the guys that played Jason and Michael Myers. I'm here at the Scarefest convention and talking to you on the Big Scary Show.
You're listening to the Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
This week, on a holiday edition of the Big Scary Show, it's December. That means Christmas. But there's also a Friday the 13th. What to do? I know. Let's celebrate both in the season of giving. We're going to give you some interviews with Victor Miller and Sean Cunningham, who wrote and directed the first Friday the 13th movie, as well as a special chat with the most famous Jason of all time. Storm takes time out from putting up his lights to rant in a hot minute. He might even mention the Krampus. The unknown scare actor makes you face your fears with a phobia about the most terrifying creature of the holiday season. The haunt rocker Jerry Vane spins the holiday tunes, and no, there's no little drummer boy here. Badger brings you the holiday news. The Round Table of Terror talks with Kelly Collins of the Scaratorium in Columbus, Ohio, as he prepares to launch his first ever Christmas-themed haunt event. There's a gruesome giveaway this month, ensuring that someone might just have a very scary Christmas. All this, plus more, only on the Big Scary Show. Ho, ho, ho.
And ladies and gentlemen, it is that time that we like to call the gruesome giveaway for the month of December. It's the gruesome giveaway sponsored by Screamline Studios. Go to ScreamlineStudios.com and check out all their really cool stuff. You know how this works. We're about to ask you a simple question. Somewhere in the show is the answer to that question. Send us an email with your name and your number to contest@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll pick a random entry, and you could be a winner. Now, if you want your chance to win a cool prize courtesy of Screamline Studios, find the answer to this question. Name one soap opera that Victor Miller wrote for. If you think you know the answer to that, again, send us your name and number to contest@bigscaryshow.com before midnight on December 23rd. We will pick a random entry, and you have the chance to be a winner of the gruesome giveaway for the month of December here on The Big Scary Show.
Greetings, Haunters. The Unknown Scarecrow here live at Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky, along with Drew Badger. And we're standing here in front of a true legend in the horror genre. I'm talking about, of course, Sean Cunningham, director and producer of the original Friday the 13th. Sean, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing great. How has Scarefest been for you? I mean, the numbers have been huge this time around.
This is my first time down here, but I'm sure it's not my last. It's a wonderful venue, and the people couldn't be nicer, and the whole vibe is terrific.
Okay. Everybody knows that you were the director and producer of Friday the 13th, but there are a couple other films and some connections that they may not know about. Last House on the Left, you actually produced some of the later sequels to Friday the 13th, and if I'm not mistaken, you have a connection to another horror producer and director by the name of Wes Craven.
Yeah, Wes and I are good friends. It dates all the way back to, 1970 or so when we first met. And I was struggling to figure out how to make movies, and Wes was an assistant editor who was also working as a cab driver. And, he came to work with me, and we formed a friendship and a bond, and we kept working together for years. After about a year and a half, I guess, maybe, of working together, Wes came up with the notion for doing a thriller, which became known as Last House on the Left. And it's been a pleasure working with him all these years.
What got you, how did Friday the 13th come about for you?
Friday the 13th was started as a title. I had made a soccer film, little kids playing soccer, and I was trying to figure out what the title of that movie should be, and we were never satisfied with any of the titles we came up with. We were brainstorming different ideas, and in the middle of that, I had said something like Friday the 13th, and I had a picture called Friday the 13th. I could sell that, but what am I going to do with this soccer movie? And I don't know, cut to about a year later, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next, and the idea of the title stuck in my head, and I started with the title and said, I wonder if anybody would stop me from using that title. And I went out to find out if I could use the title and decided I could, and called Victor Miller, my friend who'd been working on the soccer movie and the little baseball movie, and said, Victor, you want to make a scary movie? He said, yeah, but, I've never made one of those. I said, well, that's okay, neither have I. But, let's just figure out, what kind of scares us and see what happens. That's how we did it.
Well, that certainly, along with John Carpenter's Halloween, started the slasher genre of the 80s. And, of course, there were numerous sequels, but it always tickles me because everybody thinks that Jason was the original killer. And, that's just not true. It was, of course, Mrs. Voorhees. The whole concept of Friday the 13th, was that something that you and Victor came up with? I mean, as far as the whole movie itself, how many revisions did it go through before you got to the end?
I don't know. We didn't have a lot of time. I think we started working on the script sometime in the middle of July, and we were shooting at the beginning of September. So I think we just kept pushing through. Okay. I think we had two or three full drafts, but a lot of it was trying to figure out just how to get a scene done.
Okay. Is there anything else you've been working on recently, or are you just kind of doing the con circuit?
No. I've been working on a series of three, maybe more, low-budget thrillers, and they're really fun to contemplate. I don't quite know how we're going to do it, but the idea is to do small movies that bypass theatrical release and go directly to home video, broadband, foreign distribution. It's not clear how it will actually work, but it is clear that little movies cannot really afford to count on theatrical release to be successful. You have to be figuring out some alternate way. So it's the only way you can figure that out is by getting in the middle of it and doing it. And hopefully I'll learn things, and maybe people can learn from my mistakes.
Well, that's basically the way to just learn by doing.
Yeah.
A lot of us do that. Last time I saw you on screen, big or small, was on Monster Man with Cleve Hall. How was that, working with Cleve for that?
Well, Cleve is a character, and I'm a good friend with the other guy on the show, Roy Knierim. And, they were very supportive trying to get through the makeup tests that we were trying to do. And they're just a bunch of good guys.
Well, Sean, I'm not going to keep any more of your time. I'm sure people are ready to see you. And is there any way people can keep up with you, any projects you're doing? Is there a website, Facebook, Twitter?
There will be sometime very soon, we're going to launch an official, as it were, Friday the 13th website. It'll be more, it'll be a bigger tent. It'll be for all things horror, and I have high hopes for that. Is being a place where everybody can come in out of the rain and get warm around the fire, as it were.
Okay. Sean, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for taking the time to talk to the Big Scary Show. Best luck to you in your future endeavors. This is the Unknown Scare Actor, and I am out. Do you hear that? The asylum is being overrun. It's time to go to Von Caron Productions and check out the Insane Ensemble. For those troublesome lunatics, they have the commitment coat, a straitjacket designed to keep them restrained. Or, if you're the doctor who likes to experiment, then the psychosurgical coat was made just for you. Go to Von Caron Productions, www.voncaron.com. That's VonCharon, Von Caron Productions. Get there before you too are infected by the madness.
First Jason never dies on the Big Scary Show.
I'm coming through, and there is hellfire in my eyes, and bourbon whiskey on my breath. Don't care what they say, I'm telling you, I never listen to their lies. I am not afraid of death. Can you hear me growl? I'm on the prowl, I'm in the need of something foul. Deep inside, I start to howl. The mark I bear, best to beware, for I can kill without a care, and I will take you on a whirl. Come with a sword, but I didn't die then. Come with a gun, but I didn't die then. Come with a bomb, but I didn't die then. Jason's life, they can never end. You can use a chainsaw or a shotgun. You could be a samurai or an alien. You can carry weapons of mass destruction. Still, you realize you can kill Jason. Jason never dies. Jason never dies. Get out of my way, I'm coming through. Fire in my eyes and loving whiskey on my breath. Don't care what they say, I'm telling you, I never listen to their lies, and I am not afraid of death. Can you hear me growl? I'm on the prowl, I'm in the need of something foul, and deep inside I start to howl. See the mark I bear, best to beware, for I can kill without a care, and I will take you unaware. I come with a sword, but I didn't die then. Come with a gun, but I didn't die then. With a bomb, but I didn't die then. Jason's life, they can never end. Bring out the army, navy, and marine. I will wage a battle like the world has never seen. Fire at will, every weapon of war. Jason will be asking for more. Jason never dies.
Greetings, mortals, and anything else listening. Welcome to the Big Scary Show's Deadline News. We start out with this news on Halloween Extreme. Unfortunately, it looks like the second annual Halloween Extreme convention in Orlando has been postponed until 2015. At the moment, the only statement we have from them is that they have every intention of returning there in 2015 as long as we can work out the logistics. The Big Scary Show will continue to monitor this story and bring you news as it becomes available. For more information, go to their website at HalloweenExtreme.com. We have this news about Haunt X in Reno, Nevada. Announcing Haunt X, the Haunters Retreat and Trade Show, May 9th through the 11th, 2014 in Reno, Nevada. The host venue is the Circus Circus Hotel. Open to the public, Haunt X is an affordable show featuring a top-notch education program focusing on real-world solutions for haunters. Most education is included in the admission price. With a philosophy of work hard and play hard, Haunt X will feature seminars and workshops during extended hours, a paranormal tour to Virginia City, a vampire-themed pub crawl, a costume ball, and cheesy movie night are also on the entertainment calendar. The entire Circus Circus Reno Convention Center has been reserved for the event, including part of the adjacent parking structure for a product demonstration haunted house. The trade show includes areas for animatronics and a dark zone. With 1,500 rooms available, entire floors at the host hotel have been reserved for attendees. Special attendee pricing on upgraded accommodations average $65 a night during the show. Haunt X is an exhibitor-friendly event with 10x10 booths starting at $400. For updates, like them on Facebook at facebook.com/HauntX or join their newsletter at www.hauntx.com. We have this news on a new haunted house-themed TV show coming to ABC. Mike Darnell has sold his first big network project since settling into his new role at Warner Brothers TV this summer. Through the studio and the network, ABC are keeping mum on the details surrounding the pilot order, the unscripted entry with Will Deal with Haunted Houses. Fittingly, Warner Horizon is in business with horror master Jason Blum and his Blumhouse Productions on the untitled project, with Blum attached as the potential series executive producer. The news comes a few months after Darnell was tapped as president of unscripted and alternative programming for Warner Brothers TV Group, a newly formed role that has him focused on both broadcast and cable. For Blum, the Haunted House effort marks a reunion with ABC, where Blumhouse produced the found footage horror series The River with Paranormal Activity director Oren Peli in early 2012. Though that project ultimately was short-lived, the company has continued to beef up its horror portfolio with franchises that includes The Purge and Insidious. We have some Transworld news from Woodland Haunters in Maryville, Illinois. We are having a party at our house on Friday, March 21st, during Transworld for everyone who wants to come by. The bar is full and the beer will be cold. Let us know if you want to stop by. It's going to be one to remember. There are also hotels down the street from us if anyone is interested in staying there rather than in St. Louis. They're all 15 minutes from Transworld. For more information or to RSVP, visit their Facebook page at facebook.com/woodland.haunters. We have this news from MonsterCon. MonsterCon is the largest three-day multi-fandom and pop culture convention in South Carolina, proudly produced for the fans by the fans. They strive to bring the very best in celebrity guests, entertainment, comic books, collectibles, toys, gaming, artists, cosplaying, fan-friendly programming, horror, and much, much more. MonsterCon 2014 will take place July 18th through the 20th, 2014 at Timmins Arena in Greenville, South Carolina. And for a limited time, they are offering discount 2014 registrations until January 1st. Just $30 plus South Carolina taxes for a three-day pass. For more information, visit their website at monstercon.org. We have this news from the band Psychocharger. Psychocharger has released I Kiss the Joker music video in high def. Get down in the underworld. Psychocharger lays down a psycho sexy bump and grind groove that will have you working the bat pole for days on end. Inspired by the main mind behind the Devil's Playground and the Lady Joker herself, Courtney Cruz, the song was written for the Devil's Playground burlesque documentary, The Devil's Dance. I Kiss the Joker will be released as a special limited edition 7-inch color vinyl, with the flip side being the Batman theme featuring the lovely ladies of Los Angeles' Devil's Playground burlesque performing on the Bat vocals. Not to be missed, I Kiss the Joker was shot in high def at the Dragonfly nightclub in Hollywood, California at the Devil's Playground event, the Gotham City Grudge Match, and directed by Michael Bates and Company. The video features Psycho Charger, including Jimmy Psycho, Dangerous Danny, and Al Diablo, and Courtney Cruz as the Joker. For more information, visit psychocharger.com or devilsplaygroundla.com. We have this news from Dark Imaginings. Greetings, boils and ghouls. Halloween is over, and everyone thought the monsters lurking in the darkened corners of our rooms were vanquished. But you knew better, right? The Boogeyman knows your fears, and he's back. Now through December 30th, all new clients can take advantage of this sale and save at least 10% on their website packages and other custom services, including logos, graphics, custom-changing portraits, animated characters, augmented reality FX, and more. If you're a past or current client, you're eligible for even greater savings. During this limited-time deal, we're even offering some valuable coupons with select packages and services that will give you additional savings in 2014. But we only have a limited quantity available, so don't wait until they're all gone. The only condition of this sale is that we must receive all of your files and other related information needed to complete your website or project no later than June 30th, 2014. Don't worry if you aren't able to have your sponsors or other details finalized by that date. We just want to get the bulk of your project completed as early as possible. Then, you can send us the additional information about your sponsors and schedules closer to haunt season, and we'll finish things up. For more info, email Craig Hines, craig@darkimaginings.com, and request the details and special prices for your next project. We have this news from the company Creative Attraction Design. This comes from Kale via news@bigscaryshow.com. Thank you for sending this in. We have a holiday special going on for our famous living plant suits, on sale for only $945 if ordered by December 23rd. Also, our Gothic Chapel facades, which are 14 feet wide and 18 feet tall, is on sale for only $59.95, normally $6,500, if ordered by December 23rd. Orders only are going to be taken by email, so email info@creativeattractiondesign.com or phone 336-270-9237. We have this news from Haunt Nation Magazine. The latest issue of Haunt Nation Magazine is available for download, and best of all, it's free. To subscribe, simply go to www.hauntnationmag.com. And finally, some news on a childhood story coming to the big screen. All those late nights that children of the 80s and 90s spent curled up with a flashlight reading scary stories to tell in the dark will finally get a new life in the form of a movie. That's right. Everyone's favorite childhood fright fest is heading to the big screen. Deadline.com is reporting that CBS Films has accepted a pitch from Saw writers Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan to transform the classic short stories into a movie that centers on a set of outcast kids who work to save the town when their nightmares become a reality. That means The Big Toe, The Hook, The Dead Man's Hand, and some of the other tales that still haunt your every being after all these years could be fodder for cinematic screens. We all know the book's original illustrations by Stephen Gammell amplified their terror, so here's hoping they'll be incorporated somehow. Contention arose in 2011 when the books were re-released for their 30th anniversary with new illustrations. Alvin Schwartz wrote three Scary Stories editions, each released between 1981 and 1991. Based on folklore and urban legends, the American Library Association named them the most frequently challenged books of the 90s and the seventh most frequently challenged of the 2000s. There's no word yet on which tales will be incorporated in the movies, nor who will direct the project, so stay tuned. Remember, folks, if you have news about the haunt, horror, or Halloween industry, please send it to us at news@bigscaryshow.com and we'll get it on the air. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Ha 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 ha. Are you a fan of the alternative lifestyle? Do you like horror films and gaming reviews? How about Drop Dead Gorgeous Ladies? If you answered yes, then you need to check out Stiff Mag. Stiff Mag is a bi-monthly horror, alternative culture, and entertainment publication that features our horror film reviews, our tech from the crypt, and graveyard gaming features, killer reading, literary features, music reviews, columns, and of course, our beautiful graveyard girls. For subscription information, visit stiffmag.com. That's stiffmag.com.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is The Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
Alright, so there's a trend out there, and it's mostly, you know, with haunters in the zombie apocalypse and the compass. And this trend is that, well, a lot of haunters want these things to actually exist and happen. And I'm puzzled by this. I'm puzzled by this because, reality check, haunters, you are the worst people to go through these things. We'd be the first ones bitten, gone, done. I mean, you know, we're doomed. We'd be like, oh, wow, what's this cool zombie thing? Ah, dead. And the Krampus, I mean, oh, it's interesting how much this is, you know, really starting to take effect and grow in society. And I think that this is real. I think that, you know, the concept of Christmas being so overly commercial, that starting it in October and just draining the Christmas spirit out of you, gift cards, things like that. I think the idea of the Krampus is actual thought form and coming forth, and, you know, whatever truth there might have been about some creature punishing naughty children and being the antithesis for the whole concept of Christmas and generosity to others and goodwill to men. I think some of that's coming back. I think these Krampus festivals are just a outward manifestation of it. And I gotta say, again, haunters, not something you should want to be happening. The Krampus is going to come after us first, you know, and we're the naughty kids. Always happen, sometimes just not in the Christmas spirit. So careful what you wish for, because the zombie apocalypse and the Krampus, we're the first ones to go, people. If there's a movie, then the haunter's the first one to go. So until next time, keep every minute scary, and Merry Christmas.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Storm.
Hey, this is Josh Gates from Sci-Fi's Destination Truth, encouraging you to check out HauntMinute.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time of the show that we like to call the Round Table of Terror. And you know, we are smack dab in the middle of the holiday season, Christmas, and all that good stuff just around the corner. But you know, we just can't stop talking about haunts. In fact, there are a lot of haunts out there around the country that put on Christmas-themed haunts, for lack of a better word. Whether they're just opening or their regular show, or whether they're actually having an evil Santa or zombie elves or something like that. There's a lot of them. If you've listened to the show's news over the last couple of shows, you've gotten a list of a bunch of them around the U.S. and I think a couple over in the U.K. But we thought we'd talk to one or two people who actually put on or are going to put on a Christmas haunt this year. We put the call out. We got a couple of responses. One of them has not, unfortunately, been able to make it with us. Maybe they'll come in a few minutes. Maybe they won't. But we do have another one, Mr. Kelly Collins. You are all familiar with Kelly Collins, former owner of the Midwest Haunters Convention, getting ready to put on a Christmas-themed event at the Scaratorium in Columbus, Ohio. Kelly, are you with us?
I'm here. I'm out Christmas shopping, but I'm with you.
Excellent. So maybe you'll pick up a severed head or two while you're out at the shops for the big Christmas-themed event at Scaratorium. What have you got going on, and what can people expect if they come to the Scaratorium to see you?
Well, first off, the Scaratorium is in Columbus, Ohio. We're on the north side of Columbus at the Northland Plaza Center. And we're going to be opening on Friday the 13th and then Saturday the 14th of December. And it's a Happy Horror Days, an Xmas Nightmare. So it's the first time we've ever done it. What kind of inspired us was it's Friday the 13th. And since we're going to be open on Friday and we had to get a permit, which is $1,000, let's just go ahead and open two nights. Yeah, let's just open two nights. So we'll be on the 13th and 14th. We're going to see how well the response is to that, what kind of comments we get. And if it's positive, we'll open again after Christmas. And even possibly on New Year's Eve. So, you know, we can pull these things off quick, and that's what we're going to do. But we're going to test it out first this coming weekend.
Now, is this going to be something with a full staff, or are you going to have kind of a condensed version, or both haunts going to be open?
Both haunts will be open. Right now, we've got about 45 actors signed up. My goal is to hit 50, and which is full staffing. I mean, if we're going to try it, we're going to try it and see how well we do. We want to be give them the best scare we can.
Excellent. And as far as those people, I mean, are they just not ready to give up on Halloween, or are these people that just are, you know, they'd be there 365 if they could?
Well, there's people that love haunted houses and love touring haunted houses. We get so many positive comments, you know, during the season. We're just going to give it a try, and I really don't know what's going to happen. But we've got two radio stations are making it a major promotion for them, and they both they don't play Christmas music. They're heavy metal stations, and they don't play Christmas music. So they're trying to utilize this, you know, as a special listener appreciation. We're doing $13 admission on both nights.
Wow. And I would be amiss, and I apologize in advance for this, I would be amiss if I did not introduce the other co-hosts of the show. Sorry about that. Forgot to do that at the top of the hour. I just got back from a wedding, so I'm a little bit disoriented. But we do have on the line with us, of course, Storm.
Greetings. I'm the ghost of Halloween past.
The unknown scare actor.
Well, I should be the ghost of Halloween past, but I'll be the ghost of Halloween present.
And way out on the West Coast, the haunt rocker, Jerry Vane.
I'm the phantom in your underwear.
My name is Drew Badger, down in Charlotte. You're listening to the Roundtable of Terror, talking Christmas haunts with Kelly Collins. Gentlemen, I open the floor to you for any questions you may have about this what is becoming a large trend in the industry, opening up on non-Halloween events and holidays.
Sure. Kelly, I got a question. You'd mentioned the radio stations working with promotion of, you know, this Christmas December event for the haunt. Did you do any other special advertising? Did you, like, set a budget, or did you, you know, really hold back and try and do word of mouth and it being something special because capital is going to be a big part of if this works or doesn't for you?
Yeah, well, we set aside a budget for advertising. It was $1,000. And we split that between two radio stations, and actually they're sister stations. So we intended it for one, and they end up throwing in the sister station. And it's Screw Christmas, come out to the Scaratorium for Happy Horror Day. And so they don't. You know, it's their way of kind of getting back at Christmas. So they're going to send a DJ out. He's going to post for pictures and ask people to post it on their Facebook. And so they're and we're doing ticket giveaways, and it's been on since last Wednesday. So that was the thrust of our advertising, and then we went out to our Facebook, and we had a real good positive response on Facebook. So, that's kind of our limit to what we can really afford to do. It's only two nights; you got to recoup your expenses. So,
sure. Backtracking a little bit, this was your first year in the new location. How'd you do this season?
Well, we did pretty good. Our numbers were comparable to what we were last year. We wanted an increase, but we had a new haunt come into the area. We moved 8 miles away, and unfortunately, the Ohio State Buckeyes will play 3 night games in October this year, so 8 o'clock games. Those 3 things were up against us, and our numbers were flat. We thought we did pretty good.
Excellent.
I've got a question for you, Kelly. What's the difference between a regular show and a Christmas show?
Well, what we're doing is we're taking the asylum, and what's happened is the asylum are the patients, this is how they view Christmas. And so we started on the outside of the asylum, and we put up garland with lights, white lights, stretch it all the way across the asylum, stretch it across the funhouse. So that was the exterior, what we're referring to as the exterior lighting. Before you go in, or, for the each of the attractions. So once you go into the asylum, there's about 5 scenes out of 35 scenes. 5 of them have Christmas decorating. In one of them is a waiting room. There's a Christmas tree that's hanging upside down. In the entry foyer, when you come in, there's a tree with skulls and lights and a coffin that's outlined in lights. And then you get to where the lighting is on the entrance. And then when you come into the asylum, we picked out these 5 scenes. And that's where we kind of limited our decorating. But what's happened is the characters are going to be people celebrating the Christmas. Since they're insane, it's how they would celebrate Christmas and their characters. And we've added a Krampus, St. Nick's nice. Evil twin. We've got Scary Claus and Mrs. Claus. Both of them, again, are patients who that's their character they portray during, the Christmas holidays. And I'm drawing a blank here. We're going to have a reindeer, a guy who thinks he's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. One of the patients in the asylum. So then once you get over to the funhouse, we've mixed up some of the funhouse with an evil elf's workshop. Our funhouse is 3D, so we'll be painting in 3D. We've got new elf costumes, and that's kind of what we're doing. We're testing it out. We kind of threw this together in a couple of weekends, and we just want to see how it goes this year. And then we'll expand it next year because we'll have more time to work on it.
Now, I remember at Midwest Haunters Convention, there was what appeared to be a very evil-looking elf at the Masquerade Ball. Was he one of your actors?
He's one of our actors. His name is Kevin Becker, and he'll be performing for us over the weekend, too. He's about 6'9", 6'10".
He was a tall fellow.
Yeah. And, true story, he's been attending the Midwest Honors Convention for probably about 7 years, and he's competed. He's been selected every year to be in the Scariest Character Contest, and he's always come in 2nd or 3rd place. In the Scariest Character. And it was 2 years ago, he found out I didn't even know he was from where he was from. He's from this area, around Columbus, Dublin area, and he ended up coming to work for us at the haunt, being an actor at the haunt. So we started talking.
Was that costume, did that have any bearing on whether or not you decided to go with a Christmas theme, or was that something that kind of kicked in? It's like, hey, evil elf. Christmas haunt. Kind of thing.
We've been talking about doing this for probably 4, maybe 5 years now. Every year though, we just never had the time, to do it. And the other thing is, when we negotiated our leases in the past, they were 1-year leases, but with a limited amount of time that we could operate, and the rest of the time we were supposed to be in storage. Whereas the location where we are now, it's ours. We're in there for 4 years. We can open whenever we want. It's just a matter of the permits or what we have to get through the city.
Sure. So there's the possibility of maybe opening on other holidays, Valentine's Day. I've seen some haunts who do that, and some, Easter or 4th of July type things maybe?
Well, we possibly. Now it's going to be convincing my wife, Nina, whether we do this or not. She's not real happy about it because she'd like to close out the books. She does all the accounting. She'd like to get the books closed out for the year, and I'm preventing her from doing that. So we'll see. But, again, it kind of falls back, operationally, how do we do? Can we get a decent crowd in there? We'll see. I just don't know what's going to happen. And we're going to give it the best we can, and if we have a positive response, then this is something I think we could possibly do for other holidays, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I just want to give you a quick reminder that you are listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on the Big Scary Show, talking Christmas haunts with Kelly Collins from the Scaratorium in Columbus, Ohio. We're going to take a very quick break to pay some bills ourselves so we can close some books out, and we'll be right back.
It's time to build your undead horde with the best-rated zombie props 2 years in a row. You'll find them at creepycollection.com, along with the scary creepy clown props, the frozen meat locker props, the deadly doll props, the creepy killer props, and the deadly deal life-size bodies. creepycollection.com, the online source for all your pro-haunting and animatronic needs. You'll find Creepy Collection props in many venues, from yard haunts to major screen parks to movie production and even crime scene investigation. Featuring FearFlex technology, Creepy Collection is taking the static out of static. For your gore and more, that's Creepy Collection at www.creepycollection.com.
And we're back to the Roundtable of Terror here on the Big Scary Show, talking Christmas-themed events with Kelly Collins, who hasn't yet put on his Christmas event, but he will be very soon. We're trying to figure out kind of the whole mindset of why do a Christmas event.
Kelly, I got a question. Have you checked out other haunts that are done Christmas themes in order to kind of help you get this all set up?
Well, it was years ago. There was a haunt out in California, and we just happened to be out there during the holiday season. And I believe it was Moeller Manor, and they were set up for Christmas. And so I got a chance to see one, but I want to say 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago when I saw it. And I just, I've always wanted to have an opportunity to open outside of just October.
Sure. Now, is that more just for monetary gains, or is that more for I just like running the haunted house so much, or are there other aspects of that as well?
Well, I'd love to make money, obviously. we'd like to be able to pay the bills, generate some income, so that's a priority. My actors, a lot of my actors have been with me. I've been doing this 30 years, and some of my actors, probably the one's been me the most, is 22 years. I've got a couple of them been with me 20 years. I mean, they just love doing it. We have a good time together, and so this is not just for me, and it's also for them. Give them a chance to experiment with some different characters and just scare people. They love entertaining and scaring people.
And any time you can do that, whether it's Halloween or one of the other 11 months out of the year, is a good thing.
I think so. I enjoy it. So it's fun for me, too. And as far as dates, we're also, again, going to see how we do this weekend, but we're looking at after Christmas, possibly opening on the 26th, 27th, 28th, which will be a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. Kids are out of school. Possibly people will be looking for something to do. And then the other date that we were discussing today, we had a team meeting over at the haunt today. We were working on costumes. And that is to open on New Year's Eve and then close at 11, and then the actors can celebrate New Year's Eve together at the haunt.
Now, how cool would that be to have a New Year's Eve party inside a haunted house?
That'd be fun.
I don't know. Has anybody ever done it before? Have you ever heard?
I've never heard, but I think I'd be really down for going to something like that. How cool. Make it a limited amount of tickets, come in and party with the monsters kind of thing. That'd be neat.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
We're in a 40,000 square foot building, and the haunts, between the queue line and the haunt area, is probably using about 20,000. We've got a party room. I think we could probably fit 150 to 200 in our party room. And then we still got a break area for the employees, which is about 10,000 square feet, and we got storage behind that. So we've got some decent space that we could throw a decent-sized party. And we've got bathrooms with flush toilets. That's another reason why you can do something like this in the off-season. It's not like you have to put porta-johns outside when it's freezing.
Now you mentioned something that brings up a little bit. You mentioned getting permits and things to run this, and I don't know if having flush toilets expedites getting a permit for this. Just how much resistance is there, or how much of a complicated process is it to open a haunt when it's not the Halloween season?
In our current location, the only problem is getting the permit. It's a 30-day temporary permit to operate. And so that's just, you have to go through an application process. It takes about a week, and you pay $1,000. So that's the whole thing right there.
Okay. So no resistance or anything?
No. I mean, where I was before, there was resistance, but not where I am now. Everything is operating in the building. It's all functional.
Very nice.
I even have heat. When we were there today, I turned the heat on. You know, I leave the thermostat set at 45 to keep the pipes from freezing. And when we go in, we turn the thermostat up on the heater and warm it up a little bit while we're in there working.
I guess that would be kind of an issue for a lot of haunts up in the Midwest to northern half of the country in December. Especially those that have outdoor, large sections of it being outdoors, would be weather-related. So I guess, you know, if you're doing a Christmas-themed or a New Year's-themed or a Valentine's Day-themed haunt, I guess you would need to be primarily an indoor haunt just for that reason.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's we're 22 degrees outside right now, and we had snow earlier. I was glad that we weren't open this past weekend, and that's the other concern I have is the weather. This past weekend, we had about 6 inches of snow on Friday, and it was pretty cold last night, Saturday. So this coming weekend, temperatures are supposed to be in the 30s and sunny on Friday with a chance of snow Saturday. Mm. And that could hurt us.
Now, you have been in the haunted house business a long time. You said 30 years or so. Do you see this becoming a trend? I mean, I've just kind of noticed this maybe over the last 3 to 5 years that there are haunts opening other days of the year for various holidays or on Friday the 13th or things like that. Do you think this is going to be a flash in the pan thing, or do you think this is going to be kind of a longer, more drawn out trend? Do you think that most haunts that are indoors may start looking into this?
I think haunts will look into it. They'll probably sit back and watch and see how the guys that are doing it, you know, how well they're doing, and to see if it's worthwhile. I mean, there's work involved pre, you know, setting it up, cost involved, your advertising, and then in my case, permits. You're going to need to have a pretty decent headcount transactions going through the door to make it all worthwhile. And so, I don't know that all haunts would have that opportunity.
Sure, I understand that.
Well, one thing I was going to mention was, as you've noticed this trend, and this goes out to everybody, not just to Kelly, but as you've noticed this trend of other haunts opening on different holidays, where Badger, where you said it would be kind of hard for an outdoor haunt to do something like this, I see more and more pro haunters or pro haunt owners. They're not just leasing short-term space anymore. I mean, Kelly's got a four-year lease. Some of these bigger haunts, the people that want to grow more, they're finding a way to make sure they've got this property for a certain amount of time so they can do things like Kelly's doing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're paying that kind of money for a building, keep it there year-round, it'd be nice to generate money during the off-season to help pay for the building.
Yeah, that's got to be absolutely frustrating knowing it's March and you can't open your haunt for another, you know, 6 or 7 months and it's just sitting there. You're paying taxes on it, paying insurance, maybe paying, you know, mortgage payments and things like that. So you got to kind of figure out another way to earn some revenue for that.
And that's what we're hoping to do. Right now, we know we'll be open during Midwest Haunters Convention. We'll open on that Friday night. We'll be part of the Friday night tour. But other than that, I don't have any other plans, you know, after December to open until next. Next year we'll probably open in September, you know, maybe mid-September. I don't know. We'll look at the calendar and figure all that out. But in the following year, we do have plans to open more on holidays, and it'll be planned out better. You know, when we moved this past, here in 2013, we didn't find out we had to move until June, which is during Midwest Haunters Convention, and then we had to be out by the end of July. And we had to find a building and, you know, and then tear down, move, build, and it's just been nonstop, you know, since we found out. And so we didn't get a chance to plan out our off-season dates. Now we're going to do that. And this weekend will give us an opportunity to evaluate what worked, what didn't work, what do we need to do differently.
Now, Kelly, do you guys strike your sets, or does everything primarily stay up and it's just what you change and move around during the off season is the plan?
That's it. You know, we leave the haunt is set up. We go through and we make changes to the scenes that we feel we need to change. And eventually we're going to build a third attraction. We just, right now, we got other things to deal with, other priorities. So ours is set up year-round. We go and work on it during the off-season and tweak it, adjust it, make changes, and so forth.
Cool. Now, depending on how things go this year, you know, if things don't work out as well for a haunt, would you guys consider, you know, using the space for non-haunt different season stuff? Like, you know, let's say that there's not a big draw for a haunt thing. Would you guys consider striking some of the sets and do like a Christmas Wonderland, which, you know, some haunts, and especially outdoor like the farms and stuff, will utilize a lot of their, you know, haunt resources to do that?
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea. You know, the third haunt that we're planning to build hasn't been determined yet. And maybe we'll take that one and set it up in such a manner that we can, you know, pull out all the haunt stuff and switch it out with non-haunt stuff, you know. And so, yeah, that's a possibility. I'm not going to say no. I have the space that we – and when we originally were talking about doing a year-round operation, we were going to take one of the haunts and make that haunt the one that we change out for seasons, or for, you know, for whenever we're going to be open. So the third one's constantly being changed. And then when we open, you know, off season, offer them the third haunt, which is whatever it's themed. And if people want to tour one of the other two, we would have one of those other two open, or both. So they'd get the opportunity to come in for a Christmas friendly thing. But while you're here, do you want to tour a funhouse, you know, or tour the asylum? So it's something we've talked about.
Nice, awesome.
Any other questions, guys?
No.
All right. Well, Kelly, go ahead.
I was going to ask, have any of you guys been to a Christmas haunt?
I did years ago. You know, it was a charity-pushed one, Little Haunt in Connecticut. Pretty neat. It was fun to go through. I mean, it wasn't a spectacular haunt. Lots of bloody Santas yelling at you and some messed up reindeer and stuff. It was real short, but a lot of fun. And it was, for charity, it was a neat little experience. But I don't think they've done it for a couple years. I was trying to look them up to see if they did anything. You know, a lot of the Christmas haunts in the area have been, hey, we got the permanent space. Let's try it out this year. So it'd be real interesting to see with the economy recovering and how things are going, if this type of thing's going to be successful, or if some of these haunts are only doing it a couple years because it's only worthwhile for that long.
Right. See, that was my one concern, was were people Christmas shopping and not having the disposable income to tour a haunt. Now, because we're starting on Friday the 13th, through the radio station, we're doing the $13 admission. If you just walk up on Friday or Saturday and buy a ticket, it'll be $17. Our regular haunt price is $20, so we're discounting it to $17. But if you listen to one of the two radio stations that we're promoting with, 99.7 The Blitz and 103.9 Jack FM, if you listen to one of those two stations, you go onto their website and print off a coupon or download it to your phone, come into the haunt, and you're going to get $13 admission both of those two nights. So we are lowering the price to just try to get more butts in the door, you know, and get people to come out. But I do have concerns with Christmas shopping, if people will have that $20 or $17, in our case, or $13, listening to the station.
Are you located? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think what you guys really got going for you is you have a very good show, and people know that. You know, people, even in tough economy, people are willing to spend money if the quality of the entertainment's good. You know, even over the past few years, if your attractions stayed the same or if you aren't the best in town, you know, you've been hurting a little bit with the economy. And, you know, if you didn't change things up and just rode on your laurels, you know, the economy and what people being savvy, you know, consumers are spending on getting hurt. But, you know, we've all been through your show. You guys do a good job. So I think that's going to be a real plus for you guys this year. I think you'll generally even have some people, oh, I didn't get there in October. Everybody said it was good. All right, in between Christmas shopping, we're going to hit this. So hopefully that'll work out in your case this year, too.
That's the exact same thing I was thinking, too, is that you guys are known for putting on an awesome hunt, so having that reputation in the area is definitely going to work in your favor.
And are you not located in or right next to a shopping area?
We are. Yeah, we're across the street. Well, we're in a shopping center. We're the anchor on the west side of the shopping center, and then there's another anchor on the other side. And so we're in a shopping center, a strip center, and then across the street from us is another strip center, and then you've got a Meijer on the other corner. So, and of course, the street that we're on is known for shopping. So, yeah, we're in that whole vicinity. And it's funny, our billboard, we've got a 14 by 48 billboard on the main street in front of us, and it's still up. They haven't taken it down yet. So I told Nina, I said, you know, watch, we'll take that thing down this week.
Well, here's a quick thing to play off of that, too. And, Kelly, I'm not sure exactly how your audience plays out during the haunt season itself and goes, but do you guys find that a couple of nights a season, mainly Fridays, you guys end up being a babysitter service? And are you concerned that that might happen these nights when parents might be Christmas shopping and dropping the brats off?
You know, we've not seen very much of that. We'll have parents come inside. And we have chairs right as you enter the haunt. Before you buy your tickets, we have a row of chairs. And we have parents come in and sit down on the chairs while their kids are in there. And some parents sit out in the car. But I've not had parents just drop them off. Maybe once or twice. I've been out front, and I'll say, have you been through yet? And someone will say, yeah, we already have. We're just waiting for our mom. You know, but you don't see much of that, no.
Okay, I do know that's a big thing we do face up here in New England, especially Friday nights. I mean, we're not talking like little five-year-olds or anything, but, you know, those anywhere, you know, early high school, you know, eighth, ninth grade, we've got parents who, all right, here's $50, go to the hayride as many times as you can, and we'll pick you up at 9:30. And, I mean, that's literally what we deal with. Those are the high-five, you know, bratty kid nights, you know, the ones who think they're cool and, you know, just about to hit the puberty and showing off for the girl down the line. And, you know, they're the ones who try and take a shot or a punch at an actor, which is hilarious sometimes. But I've had to walk over to the owner with one of them hanging on my back once or twice this season already.
That's one of the reasons I don't work at theme parks anymore, because they did become basically a babysitting service the last couple of years. So.
Amen, brother, amen.
Not fun.
Yeah, no, we haven't experienced that at the Scaratorium. I'm not saying it won't happen at this event, but it's not something we've had to deal with up to this point.
Excellent. Any final questions, guys? I know time is running short, and I know Kelly's got money to be spending.
No, I think I'm good. I think I've scared Kelly enough for one night.
I'm good.
Well, yeah, y'all come to Columbus and check out the Scaratorium. We'll show you a good time, and thank you for the compliments, but we are proud of our staff and our actors, and we do training year-round, you know, character development, makeup, acting, and so I think that's why we have really good actors at our haunt. And so and by doing these extra events, it will enable us to do more training and get more experience. So come next October, you know, we'll be a better crew.
Yeah, dress up some elves like Michigan State uniforms, and the place will be lying out the door. You know, we'll torture them and beat them up.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that now.
Yeah, give them a bat and say, you know, here's your chance.
Yeah.
Just send Satan Claus after them.
Yeah, well, we've never done Krampus. This will be interesting to see what kind of reaction we get to Krampus. I was a little concerned about it, but I posted something on a forum, and I had a lot of people come back and say, yeah, do it. You know, we haven't had any problems. So Yeah, we're in fact, when I was at the haunt today, that's what we did, was we put together our Krampus costume and our elves and all that, got it all laid out today. So it'll be fun. We'll see. Have you guys done Krampus?
No. I have seen a Krampus knocked on YouTube a couple of times, the one in Austria and a couple of other European countries, and that's something that I really hope takes hold in the States, because I love everything about it, the legends, the folklore, all that cool stuff. So I do hope, and I know there are people in this country and in this industry that are trying to get the Krampus in a major foothold for the haunt industry this time of year. So, you know, we're the people that can bring the Krampus to the masses, so to speak.
We got the Kramp and Krampus.
In our case, we're gonna put Krampus in the. We have a children's ward at the asylum, and the children are behind the children are behind cages, and the children that come in are of the parents who are there working. So they bring their kids in. So it's like free babysitting for them. We put the kids behind cages, and that's where Krampus is going to be throughout the evening.
Well, that'd be awesome if you did turn out to be a babysitting service. You can throw all the brats in there.
We lock them in, yes.
That's awesome.
Well, Kelly, I want to say thank you again for taking the time out of your busy holiday shopping to come on and talk to us a little bit about the Scaratorium's Christmas event. Go ahead and give the website and all how you can get information, tickets, and all that like for the folks in the greater Columbus and Ohio area.
Sure, I appreciate it. It's very simple. It's columbushauntedhouse.com. columbushauntedhouse.com. That take you right to the Scaratorium's website. Tickets, you can order them online through TicketLeap. And in fact, if you order through TicketLeap, the tickets are $17. If you order through TicketLeap, you get them for $15. And then if you listen to that radio station, 99.7 The Blitz, go on their website. You can download them for $13. So a couple of good deals for you. So we're on the northeast side, actually north side of Columbus, and the Northland Plaza Shopping Center, which is at Dublin Granville Road, East Dublin Granville Road, and Cleveland Avenue.
Fantastic. So I encourage everybody to get out there and check out that and any Christmas-themed haunt you have in your local area. You know, if you listen to the last Big Scary News, we have a whole list of them. We have a list of them on our Facebook page. So if you're around a haunt that's doing a Christmas event, please go out and support it, because, like we always say, support your local haunts. But I want to thank our hosts, including Storm.
May the Krampus give you a lash for every dollar you spend on a gift card this holiday season.
The Unknown Scare Actor.
They need a Krampus at Dent really, really bad, I'm telling you.
The haunt rocker, Jerry Vane.
I got a cramp in my ass.
My name is Drew Badger. I was going to say something about my wife's Krampuses, but I think I'm probably going to decline on that. Once again, thank you, Kelly Collins from the Scaratorium, here on the Roundtable of Terror on the Big Scary Show.
Everybody, Drew Badger out here in Atlanta, Georgia, Days of the Dead, having a great time talking to so many just really big names in the industry, having a lot of fun, learning a lot of really interesting things. They don't come too much bigger than the one I'm speaking with right now. Very big, very menacing. They may be taller, but boy, this one is prolific. Probably has more actual movie kills than maybe anybody outside of like Genghis Khan or somebody like that. I'm talking to the man known as Jason. But because there's been more than one, we'll just call him Kane Hodder. Mr. Hodder, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, and I do believe I have killed more people on film than any actor in history. Now, I'm talking about murders, not like Stallone gunning down bad guys.
So real one-on-one killing, straightforward. Excellent.
Yes, 130 or so.
Wow.
I mean, that's quite a few murders.
I remember a few years ago when they were doing a box set of all the Friday the 13th movies, and they actually ran a clip, about a 15-minute clip, of all the movies, one after another, or all the kills, one after another. It was kind of a neat little DVD package there, and I lost count after a couple hundred, it seemed. So
I have them all categorized in my brain. So different methods, different tools, different weapons.
And very clever things. Now, you got started more as a stuntman, is that correct? And then moved into films, or were you kind of doing some acting and somebody suggested you do your own stunts and that's where that worked out?
No, I always wanted to be a stuntman. I went into this business with the idea of just being a working stunt person, never anticipating in a million years that I would play a character that people know. So I was just very fortunate. I was doing stunts in a lot of big films, enjoying my career, and I guess impressed a couple of the right people with the stunt work, and John Buechler decided I should play Jason in Part 7.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, I guess you want
to say
that.
Four straight movies,
yes.
You know, the most prolific Jason out there. I've spoken to a couple of others, Ari Lehman. I've spoken to Ken Kersinger, and we had some good stories about stunt work and everything. Any really, really cool stories about doing work on the set, or maybe Hatchet or any of the others that you were performing a stunt and just something really cool or something uncool happened?
Well, you know, back in the first year I was in this business, I was burned very severely doing a fire stunt. 50% of my body, almost died from it. I was in the hospital 5.5 months. All of that stuff, and oddly enough, went back to doing fire stunts.
And got to get back on that horse.
I guess. I mean, that's how I figured, but I never once considered quitting the business just because it almost killed me. So, but the reason I bring it up is because my favorite fire stunt that I've ever done was in Friday the 13th, Part 7. And at that time, I was on fire for longer than anyone had ever done on camera before. And I was on fire, fully engulfed in flames for 44 seconds, which if you watch your watch for 44 seconds and imagine being completely engulfed in flames for that length of time, you can't even believe it. But
did you know that that was going to be for 44 seconds?
Oh, yeah. I did certain preparations so that I could burn as long as possible because I wanted it to be really scary.
What was going through your mind at, say, second 35? Thinking 9 seconds to go of this,
no,
was this?
No. I wasn't going for any certain time.
But I mean, were you in pain? Was the stunt? Oh, so everything
no.
was going.
It,
okay.
It was going so well because when you do a fire stunt, you have to know when to go to the ground to be put out, and it's just an instinctual thing because you can't wait until you start getting too hot.
It's too late
to stand it anymore. It's too late. By the time you go down and get put out, there's still heat within the layers that you're wearing. So even though you might not have fire on you anymore, you can still get burned if you don't time it properly.
Let me ask you this question. I asked Ken Kersinger this question, who obviously played for Jason in Freddy vs. Jason. With the advent of CGI out there, do you think that the stunt world is in jeopardy? Because, you know, you can't jump off a 500-foot building and live, but you can in CGI. There's always going to be a place, hopefully, for stuntmen, but do you think CGI has been good or bad for stuntmen? Has it raised the bar and people are expecting you to do more things?
I think it's been both. I mean, it certainly can enhance a stunt that is performed by a stunt person, but it also, sometimes you can tell that it's CGI, and
oh, yeah.
I'd rather not know that. I'd rather see the stunt done real than something that looks so ridiculous that you couldn't really perform it that way. So, you know, it has to be have the level of excitement, and if you know it's a real person doing that, it's more exciting, I think.
Do you think it's gotten too much of a crutch to use CGI in films now rather than real stuntmen?
No, I don't think it'll ever be too much. I mean, I'd rather not see it just because, you know, I don't even know if it puts stunt people out of work, because if it's used properly, it just enhances a well-performed stunt. But, you know, I personally don't care for it that much, but I'm not worried that it's going to put us out of business either.
Now, you just recently came out with a book called Unmasked. Tell us what is this more of an autobiography, biography-type work, or what is the book mainly about?
I guess you'd say it's a biography because I didn't write it. I dictated my story to Mike Aloisi. He wrote it, and I made sure it was everything I wanted to say.
No creative liberties?
No, nothing. Everything in there, that wasn't me killing that someone. Everything in the book is real, and nothing was enhanced for a dramatic effect. So I'm pretty proud of the final product. Most people say they're very moved by the whole story, so I'm very happy with it.
Is the book available at, say, Amazon and online outlets, or can they only pick that up at appearances?
No, it's I believe it's still on Amazon, and you can get it at KaneHotterKills.com. And then, of course, I have them at appearances. But I've gotten such a good response from it because it's an actor's story, but it's so much more than that, where it's not just a resume, where so many actors just talk about their career. No, if I was going to tell my story, I was going to tell everything, good and bad. And there's plenty of stuff that's very hard to read in the book. And I think people respond to that almost more.
Well, you know, people like drama in books, and if it's all unicorns and rainbows, you know, it becomes boring rather quickly. So,
right. There's a lot of hard stuff to read. It's about getting bullied when I was young and about the burn injury and stuff. So I'm very happy with what people say to me about it.
Excellent. Now, you know, Jason was back in the 80s and the 90s and things, and now you're doing Victor Crowley and Hatchet, and I understand a Hatchet 3 is in the works. Is this going to be another long series of movies for you?
I hope so. I mean, certainly we just finished the third one. It's coming out fairly soon. I think it's going to be really well received because it's so much more over the top, if you can believe that, than the previous ones. And not just with the violence, but there's a couple moments within the movie that people are going to be absolutely dumbfounded at what they're seeing on the screen. It has nothing to do with gore or anything like that. It's just something they don't expect to see.
Now I'm intrigued. I see you have some fans here, so we'll slowly wind this down. You're known as a horror icon in the business, but you don't only do horror films. You do lots of other type of work. In fact, I believe you told me yesterday you worked on, you know, literally dozens of films over the last couple of years, it seems. What have you been working on? What can we expect to see you in the screen, besides Hatchet, over the next 6 months to a year or so?
Right. Well, I did a movie where I play a psychotic sheriff of a town called Sickle. Did one with Leslie Easterbrook called The Afflicted, where I played an abused husband. I did nothing violent in the movie. Did one with Daniel Mintz-Platz, I think it is, McLovin, where I played a bisexual sadist. I pick up kids on the street, homeless kids, taking them to a motel and do terrible things to them, which includes Scout Taylor Compton and Daniel, and very creepy, weird character. I've been doing some comedy stuff, you know, Chillerama. I did a movie called Tag. That's the movie Tag with the bisexual sadist. Then one called Cut, or I think they retitled it The Family, with Tony Todd, where he and I play prison inmates that are friends, and it was very cool because I was able to write a monologue myself and perform it about a fictional version of how I got burned.
Oh, wow.
And I'm telling Tony the story, and it was cool because after I did the performance on the set, there was a couple people crying. So
wow. Not something you would expect from the likes of a Kane Hodder.
Yeah, well.
For people who want to follow your career and find out upcoming con appearances, I know you're at Mad Monster in Charlotte coming up, and a few other places I've heard you mention. How can they get a hold of you or see your body of work, pictures, order the book? Do you have social media? Do you have Twitter? Do you have Facebook? That kind of thing. How can people follow you online?
The easiest is to go to KaneHodderKills.com.
Okay.
It has every bit of information you'd want, and because I don't Twitter, and I have a Facebook page, but I don't really operate it. So
somebody else, or just a widely occasionally.
The guy that wrote my book runs it, Mike.
Well, there you go.
So, but KaneHotterKills.com.
KaneHotterKills.com. For everything Kane Hodder, once again, thank you, Mr. Kane Hodder, for speaking with us here at Days of the Dead, a true icon in the horror industry. My name is Drew Badger for The Big Scary Show, and I am out.
Tired of surfing all over the web to find the latest haunt news? Why sift through hours of those VideoTube channels trying to find the latest how-to videos? Isn't there an easier way? Of course there is! Introducing HauntersDigest.com. With HauntersDigest.com, just one click will put a world of haunt information at your fingertips. From the latest news, to vendor information, to video tutorials. And don't forget the soon-to-be world-famous Haunt Brief, which takes a deeper look into many aspects of the industry. There's even a directory of over 800 haunted attractions, so you can find the right one for you. Still not convinced? There's even columns written by many experts in the industry covering a wide range of topics. Rumor has it a certain member of a particular podcast might even write for HauntersDigest.com. As an extra bonus, you can follow them on Twitter and Facebook. For more information, visit www.hauntersdigest.com today.
Wednesday 13th, till death do us party on the Big Scary Show.
Greetings, Haunters. Are you ready to face your fears? Brought to you by Dark Specter Custom Couture. Check out Nez's work at www.darkspectre.com.
Couture for the creatures of the night.
Greetings, Haunters. The Unknown Scare Actor here. It's smack in the middle of December. There's snow on the ground here in Cincinnati, and it just won't go away. Somebody really needs to turn up the thermostat here. And I've decided to dig up a few Christmas-related fears for you. So without further ado, here we go. The first one is Christogenetico dendrophobia, or, come on, you can figure it out, the fear of Christmas trees. Now the second one, I'm just going to spell for you because I can't pronounce it. And it's G-H-A-B-H phobia. So it's like, okay, we'll take a stab at it and go, gahabophobia, the fear of presents. Moving on through the Christmas holiday, we have celophobia, the fear of flashing and twinkling lights. Well, if you've got this rather unusual fear, you might well just lock yourself in a dark room for, well, it used to be just December, and now it's like from after Halloween to January 30th, you're going to see flashing, twinkling lights. Also, you can find Santaphobia. Then this one's pretty obvious. It's the fear of Santa Claus. Festivalisophobia, which is the fear of, could be festivals, any kind of gatherings, social events. And finally, we're going to wrap it up with Susanophobia, fear of kissing under the mistletoe. Well, I'm not afraid of that. And that's probably a good thing, because my girlfriend would probably, I don't know, try to scare me. Anyway, haunters, happy horror days.
Always remember one thing, haunters. Everyone is afraid of something.
Transworld's Halloween and Attraction Show opens for business March 20th through 23rd, 2014, at the America Center in downtown St. Louis. Transworld is the only industry trade show of its kind and is the place for anything haunt-related and open to any and all current and future haunt owners. We have everything you need to make your Halloween season a huge success. Transworld combines the products and knowledge of 300-plus exhibitors that you need to see. To register online or for the latest details, go to www.haashow.com.
Hello, everyone. Drew Badger live with a big scary show, Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky. And it's very rare that you get to speak with a man who is basically, I guess you could say, responsible for creating a legendary character. I spoke a few weeks ago. If you remember listening on a show, we did an interview with Ari Lehman, the original Jason from Friday the 13th. I'm with Victor Miller, who actually wrote the original script for Friday the 13th. Mr. Miller, how are you?
I am very well, Drew. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about how you kind of came up with the idea of Friday the 13th. Have you always been a screenwriter or a scriptwriter of horror movies, or how did this all kind of come about?
Actually, I was a writer trying to survive with a wife and two children, and which is really tricky. And
especially in the 70s.
In the 70s. It was, yes, I was trying to sell my blood the day before Friday the 13th came out, and I didn't get the $15 for that because I didn't have enough antibodies that they wanted. At any rate, no, I had written historical novels. I'd written all kinds of stuff, detective fiction. I did 9 Kojak novelizations. I did some other screenplays. One was made called The Black Pearl, which was pretty much a disaster.
Was that off the Scott O'Dell novel?
Yes. My goodness. Somebody that knows that was Scott O'Dell. And
who wrote Island of the Blue Dolphins.
Okay. And the Newbery Award book winner.
Absolutely.
And,
it's a great book, by the way.
Unfortunately, the movie was produced and directed by some people who weren't all that good at it. And it opened in the middle of a New York newspaper strike.
Oh, lovely.
So that none of that worked out. Anyway, I met Sean in the course of working on the Scott O'Dell thing, and he and I just worked together on a number of projects before that, a couple of films, Manny's Orphans, and another one called Here Come the Tigers.
So you were involved with Manny's Orphans? That was a trivia question that we had on our show
not too long ago. Yes, I wrote Manny's Orphans from a story, from a story idea by Steve Miner. And at any rate, that was during the era when everybody said that America really wanted some good G-rated movies. Well, they lied.
Of course they did.
So we put out two really nice G-rated movies, and they bombed. So Sean called me up one day and said, Halloween's making a lot of money. Let's rip it off. And that is exactly the words. And so I said, all right. And I went to see Halloween. And Deborah Hill and John Carpenter did such an incredible job of structuring that piece that I learned the structure in one sitting. It's also the benefits of a Yale English education that I can figure that out. Anyway, I went there. And then the hardest part was, because I saw there were certain rules that you had to abide by. And one was to find a venue where teenagers could be together and they would be outside of the help of adults. And Carpenter and Hill did it so well in the sense of it was during Halloween night, and every time Jamie Lee Curtis tried to get help, people said, oh, it's just kids, pay no attention to them. So it took a while, oddly enough, to come up with the summer camp thing, which I did. And then the rest, I realized that had to be a prior evil. And so I figured out the woman who'd lost her son because these campers were doing the deed instead of taking care of her kid.
Which kind of became the genre of most 80s horror movies. The couple has sex in the woods or something, they hear a noise, they go investigate, and bam, death.
Right. But in the instance in this one, I don't know how exactly that the idea of Mrs. Voorhees came, that that my villain was going to be a woman. But about 15 years later, a psychologist that I was working with said, I don't understand why you don't realize why Mrs. Voorhees was a woman.
The Mrs. might have had something to do with it.
No, but I mean, why you picked a woman who was a mother as the villainess. And it all goes back to my own sainted mother. Who was, in many ways, she was a horrible, she was a tricky person. At any rate, but the difference between Mrs. Voorhees and my mom was that if I had drowned, like Jason, my mother would have said, you only have yourself to blame. Whereas Mrs.
That's what you get for not taking those swimming lessons.
Exactly. And that was my mom. So I picked this one wonderful woman who was so wonderfully in love with her son and so dedicated to him that she would wield a machete and shoot arrows in people and stab people if they had been bad to her little boy.
Did your mother realize that what you were doing?
No, okay. And then after Friday the 13th, I did a movie with Sean, Mary Higgins Clark book, and that didn't do so well. And then I did, I wrote a movie for Columbia, and that went into turnaround. It was another horror movie. And then I got an offer to work in daytime television, and I loved the idea of the regular paycheck.
Oh, sure.
So for 25 years, I worked on One Life to Live, All My Children.
I'm sure your mother liked that.
No.
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 Steady work. And it's stories that she probably watched. My son wrote this.
No.
The evil twin who came back from the dead.
You don't understand my mother. Let me tell you. When she was in the old age home with only six more months to live, she would introduce me to her other inmates as, this is my son, the writer, but he only wrote soap opera.
Oh.
She didn't even mention. Sorry, I had to take time out to look at a fan who's changed totally in his externals.
50 pounds, baby.
You're looking good. At any rate, I'm on the radio here, on the internet radio.
People still listen, trust me.
Oh, no, I do. I love the podcast. My son has a baseball podcast.
Very cool.
That's the story of my life in short. It's been incredible. I had no idea in 1979 when I wrote this thing that in 2012 I would be standing in Lexington, Kentucky, talking to you with a barn full of people dressed up in various...
Absolutely. There's Jason's walking Jason's around, people, Camp Crystal Lake shirts, all sorts of things.
And camp counselor shirts. So.
Oh, sure. Now, you did not write any of the other Friday the 13th movies.
No.
How did when they said they were going to do a sequel and a third and a fourth and a fifth and a whatever, were you ever contacted or did you ever have an issue with that?
No, because they owned the rights, first of all, and then secondly, sequels have to be made at a lower budget than the original if the original is a success. So by the time Friday the 13th had already been out and was on the top 10 for like 20 weeks or whatever it was, I was too expensive. So I went off and did it. But in retrospect, I would not have been all that happy doing them anyway because they decided in a very funky and clunky way to bring Jason back to life. Now, Jason was dead at the beginning of my movie. Mm-hmm. The only movie I'm interested in writing, and I would love to do it, is a prequel to see Pamela Voorhees and the guy who screwed her over.
Sure. That's an
interesting concept. Jason's father.
They've done a few prequels of late for other franchises. Why?
Right, because
why not this one?
Because the alleged remake of Friday the 13th was not a remake. That last one they did.
The Rob Zombie one.
Yeah, the Rob Zombie one, which I thought was unfair to the fans because it was unfair to me, too, because I said, well, if it's a remake, I get a different fee from my contract with the Writers Guild. And so I contacted the Guild, and they said, no, actually, it's in the contract, it's a sequel, but they're publicizing it as a remake. So that, to me, is the most awful double dealing.
Loophole. And
well, it's a loophole for me. But what it did was trick the fans, and they caught on very quickly when they went and saw the film. I looked at the screenplay, and I said, well, no, it's not a remake. They're using, 19 minutes of my sort of part, and then the rest is all new stuff. And so that made no sense at all. So I'd love to do a prequel.
Now, there you have it, folks. Anybody wanting to do a prequel to Friday the 13th, please contact Victor Miller.
Well, if I had the rights, unfortunately, it would have to be Sean and Warner Brothers, and I don't know who New Line probably has the rights now. But
ever thought about writing, Friday the 13th novels or novellas or anything?
No, because, again, all that's property of, I guess, New Line Cinema, and that, so that's fine. I just finished a horror screenplay with two guys I met at the Big Bear Lake Horror Film Festival. Called Eden Falls, and we're trying to shop that around. I wrote it with them on Skype.
Oh, very cool.
Which was incredible fun because I had, in the soap opera business, you write in a team. So I've been, for 25 years, I've been writing in a group. So it was most natural to do that. After I did that, I sat down with my son, who's a bass player and a writer in California, and we wrote a screenplay together. And that was incredible. If you've never written a screenplay with your father or your son, it is something to try because he kept finding new ways to tell me I was wrong that wouldn't make me throw a tantrum. And it's a really nice piece, and we're hoping. Right now it's being read by Ryan Hurst, who played Opie in Sons of Anarchy. And his father, I went to drama school with his father, Rick, who was in Dukes of Hazzard. Dukes of Hazzard. Rick Hurst was the state trooper who always got the short end of everything.
Oh, okay. And wasn't James Best? That was
no,
okay.
No.
Cletus?
I think so. That sounds
because
right.
There's Enos. That's Sonny Schroyer, and then James
big
Best
tall,
was Ross
big Rossi. Tall guy.
Yeah,
big
Cletus,
tall blonde.
Kind of,
okay.
Sorry,
yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha.
And then that's Ryan's dad.
Oh,
and
wow.
I directed Rick and some stuff in drama school. And we were good friends. And then he went off and was a major star. But this movie is a father-son. I would love to get the two of them to do it.
Sure.
So anyway, that's another project we're hoping to get off the ground.
You ever thought about doing a script about maybe a group of disgruntled soap opera stars whose show gets canceled, and then they go on some kind of killing spree against the people who canceled
Sounds
them?
Sounds good to me. Just call me
you
on
have
Skype.
A little, you have a little experience in that.
I have, yes, and there are a number of stars I'd love to kill.
So you'd
have to pick out which ones they are.
So for anybody who would like to Skype Victor Miller with an idea or suggestions like that, or if anybody wanted to get in touch with you or check out some of the things that you're doing or maybe even future con appearances, how could they go about doing so?
I'm glad you asked that. All right, so Facebook, I'm Victor Brook, B-R-O-O-K-E, Miller. My mother made that up. She thought it sounded classy. Yeah. Anyway, Victor Brook Miller is on Facebook.
then it's VicMill1 at Comcast.net, or you can go to my website, which is victormiller.com. And what I have been doing for free, because I really enjoy doing it, is reading people's screenplays and giving them notes.
Oh.
I can't sell them for you because I've
sure.
I haven't got enough contacts to blow up a nose with. But it, you know, is in the soap opera business too long. But I love reading people's work. And in 25 years in the soap opera business, you're coming out with 5 hours of drama a day. I mean, a week. And I've learned an awful lot about structure. And I love reading the people's work. And I read one or two.
I have a couple of little screenplays I've been working on for the last 10 years or so. I'll have to send those to you.
Yeah, I mean, you'll get what you pay for, and you can either like my remarks or not. But I will at least I'll do it and give it my whole
very very
thing.
Cool.
It's fun. I love doing it.
Well, we'll have to collaborate on that soap opera thing. I might have to Skype you in on that.
Sounds good to me. Yeah.
Well, Victor Miller, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to the man who basically created a franchise. Can't say too many people have done that.
If I'm so important, why is my table empty?
I see lots of stuff on
here. Everybody's over with Tony Todd.
Tony's, you know, he's Tony. And,
of course.
And Denise Crosby, she's prettier than you, I'm sorry. And, you know, other people.
When I was working at One Life to Live, I was coming out of the studio one day, and the fans were all out there with their little red tennis shoes and their cameras. And they said, are you anybody? And my wife, who was with me that day, said, no, he's just a writer. And they all turned and walked away.
The ultimate insult.
You got it.
Once again, Victor Miller, a big pleasure to speak to you. My name is Drew Badger. I am at Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky. And I am also out.
In a world of generic one-size masks.
Ugh, this mask is too tight for my head. I can't see.
Where you don't have time to wait to be scared.
You're taking too long. Just throw something on and get to your scene.
Darkest fears unlimited. Masks, props, and blood that will make your haunt scary.
All right, this mask fits perfect, and parts of it are even pulsating. Finally, I'm going to scare every night.
Darkest Fears Unlimited.com.
'Twas the fright before Christmas, and all through the haunt. Not a creature was stirring, no victims to taunt. The skeletons were hung by the boiler with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be scared. The monsters were hiding underneath all the beds, while visions of blood and gore danced in their heads. Elvira showing cleavage and a vampire named Drac had just settled down after a typo negative snack. When out in the graveyard arose such a clatter, the zombies woke up to see what was the matter. Up from the cold earth, they dug their way out, moaning and groaning and shuffling about. The full moon shone brightly high in the sky as werewolves howled and a bat flew by. When what did my wandering eyes see and fear but a horde of demons snacking on reindeer? And a little old driver, so bloody and slick, I saw at that moment the end of St. Nick. More rapid than harpies, they ate and they fed, and he screamed and he cried as he fell over dead. Now Barbas and Amon, Forcus and Zagon, eat Margus and Legion, Kali and Leviathan. Drain all his blood, suck the bones clean. Finally, he knows that I say what I mean. As his bones hit the ground for scavengers to take, growling and snarling and claiming their stake. Up to the housetop, something flew. With a sleigh full of toys and evil to do. And there was a shiver I heard on the roof, the thumping and pawing of really big hoofs. as I drew in a hand and was turning around, down the chimney came the Krampus with a bound. He was covered in fur from his head to his foot, and his hair was stained with blood and with soot. A bag full of children he had flung on his back, opening it up to check for a snack. His eyes, how they burned. His teeth were all bloody. His claws were like razors. His hooves were all muddy. His mouth was spread in a wide, wicked grin. And foul-looking drool started to run down his chin. A sharpened finger bone he held in his teeth, used as a toothpick to clean out the meat. He had a sharp face, looking evil and cold, and his laugh was as chilling to all who were bold. He was tall and lean and scary as hell. And my nose curled up from an ungodly smell. With a flash of a tooth and a turn of his head, soon gave me to know I had plenty to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work. Coal in the stockings, and then he turned with a jerk. Grabbed the bottle and drank of his schnapps, and giving a nod up the chimney, he shot. He sprang off the roof and gave a loud scream, disappeared in the night like some horrible dream. But I heard him say, as he vanished into the night, "Scary Christmas to all, and to all a good fright." Happy holidays.
It's 2013. How do you keep up with all your customers who are on the go? The answer, HauntApps.com. HauntApps is designed to provide your haunted attraction with a direct line of communication to your customers via the iOS or iPhone and Android applications. Some features you will find with HauntApps include customized branding with your attraction's logos, an interface that works for your needs, iPad enhancement for the iOS, audio-video playback, direct communication, and the option for online ticketing. Let HauntApps do all the hard work so you can concentrate on scaring the customers. That's HauntApps.com for your mobile application needs.
Alice Cooper, man behind the mask. On the Big Scary Show.
You're with your baby in your parked alone on a summer night. You're deep in love, but you're deeper in the woods. You think you're doing alright. Did you hear that?
As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following people and others. We'd like to thank Kelly Collins from the Scaratorium for talking about the trials and tribulations of putting on a Christmas-themed haunt. Good luck. We'd also like to thank Victor Miller, Sean Cunningham, and Kane Hodder for talking about their experiences with Friday the 13th. Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse. Von Charon Productions. Von Charon, VonCharon.com. Screamline Studios at ScreamlineStudios.com. We'd also like to thank The Four Ghosts, Storm, catch his ramblings at HauntMinute.com, The Unknown Scare Actor, videos and more, UnknownScareActor.com, The Haunt Rocker Jerry Vane, be sure to pick up his latest CD, Virus 308, on JerryVane.com, and Drew Badger, actor, trainer, consultant, and more, rabbitbadger.biz. Be sure to tell us what you think. Send feedback to us at feedback@bigscaryshow.com. And keep sending in those news items, news@bigscaryshow.com. Be sure to follow and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/bigscaryshow. Make sure to follow us on our new Twitter account, @TheBigScaryShow. We just may occasionally tweet out some information that you won't find anywhere else. Be sure to search for The Big Scary Show on iTunes. And while you're there, please give us a review. We would appreciate it a lot. Tune in next time when we bring you the latest news and information from the world of haunting and horror. And thank you once again for listening. Without you, we are nothing. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and others. This is The Big Scary Show.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show, LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.